Good morning. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all of these items in one place, they are attached in the calendar event that you received from Ms. Burt today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place you on the list to be recognized. And right now, the CLA will take an oral roll call of our members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Roll call will commence now. Chair Dabney?
Present.
Vice Chair Sandsteed?
Present.
Representative Kreisha?
Present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Daniels?
Daniels, present.
Representative Damith?
Present.
Representative Drefkowski?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Jordan, present.
Representative Marcourt?
Marcourt, present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Richardson?
Present.
Representative Thompson?
Thompson, present.
Representative Walgamott?
Walgamott is present.
Representative Shung?
Present.
Representative Joaquin?
Present.
Madam Chair, we have 17 present and quorum.
Thank you very much. Good morning, members. Today we are on a very tight schedule, so it is my intention to adhere to testimony timelines, and I would just ask that you be respectful of those timelines. Representative Marquardt, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes from Wednesday, March 16th? And if so, would you like to move to approve those minutes from Wednesday, March 16th?
Madam Chair, I move to approve the March 16th, 2022 minutes of the Education Finance Committee.
Thank you very much. Members, is there any objection to moving the minutes? Hearing none, all of those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. And very good. The minutes will be approved. As I said, today we have a very strict timeline that we'll be adhering to. We will be hearing House File 4300 from Representative Dabney. Representative Dabney, would you like to make a motion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you. I did have my hand up. Before we move the bill, I don't want to mess up your timelines. That's not my intention, but I know it's going to be tight, so I have a couple questions, and I wanted to ask these of the chair before we officially move this bill.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering, as we come in, we have the governor's supplemental budget in front of us, and then we're also going to be moving the House DFL, I'm sure, education bill, their counter proposal in the next week or couple weeks. Is there any conversations with Speaker Hortman or other leadership to take us out of the virtual environment so that we can actually be doing these meetings in person and we could be a little bit more collaborative in that process? I'm just wondering what the conversations are behind the scenes.
Representative Kreisha, I'm going to turn that over to Representative Dabney.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Kreisha, for that question. At this point, as you know, the House only has one hearing room that is set up technologically for hybrid hearings to allow someone like you, who I believe doesn't come into the Capitol frequently, to participate fully, as well as those who live closer or who choose to come into the Capitol, as Representative Sandsteed does more frequently. So that really limits the House's ability to be virtual. But as we've seen in this committee, the virtual platform, while still not my favorite, actually has allowed for greater collaboration, as we've had people, and I think we'll see this today, from across the state, able to participate in a way that's less disruptive to their lives. I miss seeing you in person. Don't get me wrong, Representative Kreisha. I'd much rather we were fully back in person, and hopefully we'll get there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair?
Representative Krisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my comments were really on the function and how we're going to go forward with process and so forth. Just to clarify a couple comments, I do still come in at least once or twice a week. I come in at different hours, so to adhere to some of the rules and make sure that when I do my signings and so forth, I'm adhering to what the House DFL has put in place with us. So I'm really not trying to make this about who's here, who's not. I'm trying to figure out how we're trying to do the functionality and our work going forward. So I'll leave it with that, and I know you have a timeline.
Thank you, Representative Krisha. Your points are duly noted, and we will work to clarify your answer for you as we move forward. And with that, Representative Dabney, would you like to make a motion to move House File 4300 before the committee to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in an omnibus bill?
Madam Chair, I move House File 4300 before the committee to lay over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill.
Very good. Members, with the bill before us, I am going to go ahead and have Representative Dabney introduce House File 4300.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I will be brief. You'll recall the hearing earlier this month where we reviewed the governor's budget proposal. This bill is that budget proposal. You will recognize much of it then. We have a significant number of public testifiers today, and I wish to welcome them. To assure that we get to hear from as many of them as possible as and time permits, let's get right to it. Madam Chair, I'd like to turn things over to Commissioner Mueller. She'll walk through a presentation of the Due North budget plan, and then Mr. Uni and Ms. Yetter will walk us through the bill.
Excellent. Thank you, members. We will be taking questions once all the testimony has been concluded. It's our goal to lay this bill over by 11:55 this morning, and we will reserve as much time as possible at the end for your questions. Welcome to the committee. Commissioner Mueller, please identify yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Vice Chair Stansteed and Chair Dabney and committee members. I'm Heather Mueller, Commissioner of Education. I want to first thank you for the opportunity to present the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's 2022 supplemental budget to the committee on February 10th, and then for authoring this bill. My team and I appreciate today's opportunity to provide the committee a more detailed walkthrough of the bill language. Before I hand it over to my colleagues, I would like to make a few remarks. As I said during the last presentation, because budgets reflect the values of the people who create them, the budget we are putting forward is a clear reflection of what we value in support of our students, families, staff, school communities, and communities. This budget includes funding for evidence-based strategies that first and foremost center our students. This budget invests $788 million in fiscal year 2023 and roughly $1.7 billion over the next biennium in our public education system, taking advantage of a once-in-a-lifetime and generation opportunity for life-changing and systemic transforming investments. Simply put, this budget is the action behind the words. It provides real investments across the education system to drive the transformational change we know is needed in Minnesota. For our youngest learners, we are making a significant allocation to early learning scholarships and a targeted pre-K program. We are also putting forward a significant allocation for universal meals because we know that all students learn, perform, and enjoy time at school better when they are consistently fed nutritious meals. I'm also happy to say that today the governor is announcing a revised budget that provides more staffing to increase district participation in the community eligibility provision. This budget invests in specific and targeted strategies to meet the academic, behavioral, and social-emotional needs of our students and our families. You'll see allocations in an innovative, bold literacy incentive and initiative, multi-tiered systems of support, rigorous coursework, competency-based education, full-service community schools, culturally specific learning opportunities, after-school opportunities, funding for students who are English learners, funding for students receiving special education services, and American Indian Education Aid. I'm also proud to announce that today's revised budget includes an increase to the adult basic education formula, ensuring that it increases when the general education formula increases. We also make important investments in student personnel, student support personnel, mental health screening, school-linked behavioral grants, and early childhood mental health services to meet the demands of the number one thing that our students are telling us they need: mental health supports. This committee has dedicated time to hearing about the challenges to and the resources needed to best serve our students, to receive special education services. We must act to reduce the special education cross subsidy, provide more targeted funding for intermediate districts that serve students who need a higher level of support, and ensure that programming exists across the state for our students at the end of their K-12 experience. Additionally, if we truly want to recruit and retain people in the education profession, then we must stop admiring the problem and take action by making real investments in the education workforce. We must support the initiatives in this bill that diversify our educator workforce, build mentorship and induction programs to retain teachers, create pathways for high school students interested in the teaching profession, and provide training for our support professionals. Finally, the bedrock of our education system continues to need investment, and this budget delivers, building on last year's formula increases by putting an additional 2% on the general education formula in fiscal year 23. We have the opportunity to fundamentally shift the trajectories of our Minnesota students' lives for the better. Like I said in the last hearing, our students, staff, families, and school communities deserve better, and this budget is our opportunity to do better. With that, Mr. Chair and Ms. Chair, I am proud to have IMDE colleagues with me to do a walkthrough of House File 4300. I believe Mr. Daley Gleeman, Assistant Director of School Finance, will be starting us off with Article 1.
Thank you, Commissioner Mueller. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Lehman. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Daley Lehman. I am the Assistant Director of School Finance at MDE. I will start us off with Article 1, General Education. I'll just talk about the sections and give a short summary. So sections 1 and 2 of Article 1 allows broader access to public education through supplemental courses offered by state-approved online providers. These funds requested will allow students I just got a message on my computer here. These funds will allow students enrolled in the Bureau of Indian Education or BIE schools to access supplemental online learning courses from state-approved online learning providers. Sections 3 through 6 increases the career and technical education or CTE revenue from 35 to 50% of approved expenditures. And this section also broadens the allowable use to include the cost of transporting students enrolled in work-based learning, creating a new student transportation reimbursement program to support the transportation costs. Section 7 expands the eligibility for English learner revenue, also referred to as EL revenue, to include early childhood special education students. Section 8, this section, there's a few that goes into it, but Section 8, 10, and 15 revolve around the cross sub recommendation. Section 8 increases both the basic and concentration allowances for EL revenue in FY23. EL allowances to increase the basic general education formula allowance. Section 9 simplifies the eligibility criteria to participate in state-approved alternative programs or SAP programs to be more intentionally focused on state resources for underserved youth to move towards high school graduation. Students who are not on track to graduate will benefit as the resources will be more targeted towards their needs. Section 10 increases the EL concentration factor associated with the concentration allowances increase referred to in Section 8. Section 11 allows students enrolled in BIE schools that are also enrolled in supplemental online learning programs to generate online learning aid. Section 12 increases the general education formula allowance by 2% to $7,000 per adjusted per pupil unit. This is a $137 increase. Section 13 links the extended time revenue allowance to the general education formula in FY24 and later. This section expands extended time revenue eligibility to include all students placed in residential programs during the summer for instruction they receive, excluding those programs that already generate the extended time revenue. Section 14 links the local optional revenue or LOR allowances to the general education formula in FY24 and later. Section 15 moves the EL concentration formula from the basic skills revenue statute to the EL revenue statute in Section 8. Section 16 makes technical changes and removes obsolete language from the compensatory revenue use statute. Section 17 increases the percent of compensatory revenue that must be spent in the generating site from 50% to 80%. Section 18 requires districts to provide details on the functional areas in which the Safe School revenue was spent through an annual report to the Commissioner of Education. Section 19 specifies that the new CTE transportation aid would be paid at 100% on a reimbursement basis. Section 20 modifies the EL appropriation from 2021 session language to account for the portion of the EL funding increase in the bill. Sections 21 through 26 makes appropriations for the funding provisions in Article 1, and then Section 27 it repeals obsolete language in CTE revenue in the statute. And now I will turn it over to my colleague, Mr. Uni, who will take on Article 2.
Thank you, Mr. Lehman. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Uni, please identify yourself for the record, then proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Ado Shuni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. I'll be covering Article 2 through Article 4, and then I will pass it back off to my colleague, Mr. Lehman. Article 2 is Education Excellence. Sections 1 and 2 expand competency or standards-based approach to education using evidence-based models that focus on what students know and are able to do rather than the traditional A through F model. Funds will be used for professional development of staff, family engagement, and increasing the department's capacity to implement this proposal. Section 3 is part of the Bold Literacy Plan. It makes changes to the reading proficiency no later than the end of third grade statute. This includes changes to the literacy goal, identification, intervention, staff development, local literacy plans, and commissioner duties. Section 4 makes modifications to the statute on scientifically based reading instruction associated with the Bold Literacy Plan. Section 5 allows MDE to spend fees collected through the online learning program for administration. Section 6 are clarifications to the full service community school statute by adding to the definitions portion, acknowledging that intermediates can have the model, planning and implementation grants parameters, needs assessments, programming plans, and review reports. Sections 7 through 9 are a clarification that American Indian education programs must meet the unique educational and cultural needs of American Indian people, and accountability factors are met before others can participate in the program. To receive aid, districts must have a plan. Section 10 is the increase to American Indian education aid-based funding. Section 11 is funding for student support personnel, and this is the greater of $22 times the number of pupils enrolled, or $35,000. Section 12 is modifications to the use of literacy incentive aid to require training in the science of reading, hiring a reading and dyslexia specialist, and hiring literacy coaches for the most underperforming schools. And this is also associated with the Bold Literacy Plan. Section 13 is funding for a statewide implementation of mental health screening and referral systems in schools by school-based mental health staff. This is including school administrators to ensure that mental health and well-being of Minnesota students and staff. Funds will be provided through a per pupil allocation based on K-12 enrollment counts to obtain professional development on mental health screening of students and school staff well-being self-assessments, procure needed resources and supplies, pay for school staff and time conducting student mental health screening and school staff well-being self-assessments and other expenses in implementing systems for mental health screening of students and school staff well-being self-assessments. Sections 14 through 17 are the appropriations associated with this article. Section 18 are funding for grants in this article and other grants to districts and charters for several programs to implement competency-based education that was noted at the top of the article, for school-based mental health screening, for grants to implement multi-tier systems of support. And this is broken down for work by the regional centers to act for grants to access letters training, for the Bar Center to work with multi-tiered systems and support grant recipients, for tribal state relations for school staff, and for work done by the Carey Center. Grants for also for implementing the Bold Literacy Plan, for work to establish science of reading academies, maintain a literacy unit at the department, expand literacy and dyslexia data collection reporting, grants to libraries to support early literacy, and a grant to reach out and read. There'll also be grants for culturally specific learning opportunities, grants to expand rigorous coursework opportunities for underserved students, grants for school full service community schools, funding for a grant to intermediate school district mental health and innovation program, for intermediate districts to implement full service community school models, for student support personnel, and for school linked behavioral grants. And this includes a portion set aside for supporting school staff. Madam Chair, this completes Article 2, and I can move on to Article 3.
Very good. Please continue.
Article 3 covers teachers. The first section is for development and implementation of American Indian history and cultural training requirement for teacher relicensure. This will create a new relicensure requirement specific to American Indian history and culture and fund materials to support teacher training. Section 2 updates the aid entitlement statute for QCOMP. Sections 3 and 4 clarify that QCOMP funds unexpended at the end of the fiscal year must only be used for QCOMP purposes in future fiscal years that it carries over to. Section 5 allows Grow Your Own funds to be expended on teacher licensure exams and licensure fees. Section 6 clarifies language for Grow Your Own grants for programs serving secondary students around courses encouraging students to pursue teaching careers. Section 7 increases department administrator costs from $100,000 to $300,000 to account for the increase in funding for Grow Your Own, for the Grow Your Own program under this bill. Sections 8 through 9 establishes Grow Your Own programs for early childhood educator and for teacher licensure shortage areas. This includes language on program parameters, grant procedure, department administration, establishes a special revenue account, and requires reporting to the commissioner. Section 10 details the appropriations for the Grow Your Own program. Section 11 details appropriations for QCOMP. Section 12 is a temporary modification increase to the applicable earnings limit for a teacher collecting retirement payments. Section 13 establishes a teacher PEP program at a higher ed institution for licensure teacher of the blind or visually impaired. And Section 14, which wraps up Article 3, is funding for grants for statewide teacher mentorship, educator career pathways, paraprofessional training for working with students receiving special education services, aspiring teacher retention bonuses, a grant to the U of M for scholarships for the early childhood family education licensure program they have, American Indian history and culture licensure requirement implementation, the blind or visually impaired graduate program, Grow Your Own programs, and licensure fees for aspiring teachers. Madam Chair, that wraps up Article 3, and I can go on to Article 4.
Please continue.
Madam Chair, Article 4 details special education provisions. Section 1 is the provision of special instruction. This extends special instruction and services for students receiving special education services until age 22, and this is consistent with federal law. This proposal results in additional special education costs because students remain eligible for services up to a year longer than they would under current law. Section 2 is for life and vocational skills secondary transition programs for students receiving special education services. This is funding to improve the capacity of special education secondary transition programs serving 18 to 21-year-old students to provide life skills and vocational skills instruction. The funds will be used for grants for up to 25 school districts, charters, or tribal schools with allowable expenditures of the funding to include hiring or contracting staff, procuring instructional resources, providing needed assisted technology, job coaching, and other supports for employment and technology to instruct and improve life skills and vocational skills. Section 3 increases the special education cross-subsidy reduction to reduce the state total cross-subsidy per average DLE membership steady at the fiscal year 2019 levels. This is accomplished by increasing reduction aid from 6.43% to 12.14% of the cross-subsidy in fiscal 23 and later years. Section 4 is additional state funding for special education separate site and programs, funding to provide additional services that students receiving special education services with highest needs require and which are not sufficiently met with state and federal special education funds. And this is the special education setting 4 and higher. Section 5 are the special education appropriations. Section 6 is around changes to specific learning disability criteria. This would be updates to the policy and state rule to remove the option for the discrepancy route to eligibility, along with other language changes to update and align with other state and federal language, as well as supporting districts to implement the rule change. Minnesota policy would then be aligned to current and evolving evidence-based practices and identification. These funds that we're requesting would be to operationalize changes to existing criteria, provide training guidance, and to provide training, guidance, and evaluation on those policy changes once implemented. Section 7, which wraps up Article 4, are appropriations for funds to the department, funds for life skills, life and vocational skills, as well as additional funding to special education sites and programs. And that concludes Article 4, Madam Chair. And with that, I will hand it over back to my colleague, Mr. Lehman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ooney. Mr. Lehman, please continue.
Yes, Article 5 relates to facilities. So Sections 1 through 3 links the long-term facilities maintenance or LTFM allowance and equalization allowance to the general education formula allowance for school districts and charter schools in FY24 and later years. And Section 4 is the LTFM. Article 5, can we move on to Article 6?
Please proceed.
Yes. So Article 6 is nutrition and libraries. So our Section 1 of the article is this section relates to the universal free meals with community eligibility provision. This section provides free breakfast and lunch to students attending any registered, certified Minnesota school participating in the National School Lunch Program and School Breakfast Program. Funding will be used on school meals for Minnesota students, as well as administration costs, MDE to implement this proposal. Section two, this section clarifies that school meals must be provided without charge to any student. Section three clarifies that any Minnesota school that participates in the USDA school breakfast program must provide breakfast at no cost to any students. Section four states that MDE must provide funding equal to the difference between the federal reimbursement and the average cost of a school breakfast for schools participating in the school breakfast program. Section 5 clarifies that in statute that the early childhood special education students are eligible for free breakfast. Section 6 relates to the school lunch program appropriation, and Section 7 is the school breakfast appropriation. That concludes Article 6, and I'll pass it back to Mr. Ooney.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ooney, please continue.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you. That'll be the last time the hot potato is passed. I'll be wrapping up our presentation for the department. Section 7 is for early learning services or early childhood. Section 1 allows state funding for Head Start to be used for costs associated with program operations, infrastructure, or reconfiguration of centers. And it also creates a set aside of 10.72% of the total Head Start appropriations to be designated for tribal Head Start programs. Section 2 clarifies that only 4-year-olds the public pre-kindergarten program established in this bill is for 4-year-olds who are the only eligible participants in that program. Section 3 sets the minimum hours of instruction at 850 hours for the public pre-K program that's established in this bill. Section 4 increases the per pupil amount of developmental screening aid by age group. Section 5, which I mentioned before, establishes the public pre-K program for eligible 4-year-old children. This will be a targeted program for underserved students. This will be full-day state-funded pre-kindergarten, using a mixed delivery model comprised of school-based, Head Start, and community-based license center and family child care programs. Section 6 adds children currently in need of child protective services to the eligibility requirements to receive an early learning scholarship. It also adds these children and children with a currently incarcerated parent to the prioritization list of early learning scholarships. Section 7 prioritizes children younger than 4 years old for early learning scholarship, and as mentioned, adds children who have an incarcerated parent. strikes this section also strikes the pathway to scholarship language as that program or funding is being shifted to the public pre-kindergarten program. This increases efforts for parent and family education and cancels a scholarship if the recipient is not enrolled in 3 months rather than the current 10 months, but allows for an extension if no program is currently available. Section 8 eliminates the requirement that a kindergartner receiving special education services needs to receive more instructional hours to generate more instructional hours than students not receiving special education services to generate a 1.0 people unit. Section 9 strikes the line of statute related to calculating compensation revenue based on the VPK numbers, which would not be applicable when the full public pre-kindergarten program is established. Section 10 makes clear that public pre-kindergarten pupils may not be included in calculating declining enrollment in the first year of the program. Section 11 clarifies. Section 11 clarifies that school districts and charter schools are eligible for children's mental health grants. Section 12 sets the early learning scholarships appropriation for fiscal 23 and makes clear that funds may be allocated to Head Start and licensed child care providers to implement the voluntary public pre-kindergarten transition year. Section 13 increases appropriations for early childhood family education aid. Section 14 sets developmental screening aid appropriation. Section 15 establishes 2023 as a possible transition year to give currently existing voluntary pre-kindergarten, school readiness plus, and early learning scholarships pathway 2 programs a year to transition to the new VPK program for eligible 4-year-olds. And section 18 sets appropriations for the article. First subdivision clarifies the funds that are appropriated to MDE. Subdivision 2 appropriates funds for mental health services and early childhood social workers for grants to early childhood social workers and strengthen early childhood programs. Section 3 is the funding to the pre-kindergarten program. And section 4 is the funding for infant and early childhood mental health consultation in schools. And Madam Chair, that concludes Article 7.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. And I think that's the end of the testimony. No?
Madam Chair, we have two more articles, briefly.
Thank you. Okay.
Article 8, Madam Chair. Article 8 is community education. The first section is funding to reestablish the after-school community learning grant program that expired in fiscal 2009 in order to meet the needs for expanded learning opportunities in communities across the state. The funding will provide grants that connect schools and communities so they can offer after-school programs that meet the needs of students and their families. Funding will be used for a contract with Ignite After School to build statewide systems of support so that all after-school program providers have access to professional development and technical assistance. Article 2 adds a factor to the adult basic education growth formula that clarifies that adult basic education aid cannot be lower in a future year if the average contact hours decrease. Section 3 is funding to allow any Minnesotan to take a commissioner-approved high school equivalency exam for free. A full high school equivalency assessment battery can cost up to $144. Section 4 is the funding for this high school equivalency test appropriation. And Section 5 is the appropriations section for the article. Subdivision 1 is the appropriations to the department. Subdivision 2 is the funding for after-school community learning program. And Subdivision 3 is the funding for out-of-school community partnerships grants to establish or two community organizations to support youth engagement and youth employment and training. And just to note that a portion of the funding will be used to provide training and technical assistance to the community-based organizations receiving the grants. That concludes Article 8. And Madam Chair, there's the last article is Article 9 on state agencies.
Please continue.
Madam Chair, the final article on state agencies, the first section is an appropriation to the department. This is for administration associated with the pre-kindergarten administration, specific learning disability criteria change and implementing school lunch and breakfast changes under the universal meals proposal. And then section 2, which rounds out the bill walkthrough, is an appropriation to the Professional Educator Licensing and Standard Board, or PELSB, for enhancements to the licensure system and to allow PELSB to review and approve licensure applications in a timely and effective manner.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. Thank you also, Mr. Lehman, for this walkthrough. At this time, Ms. Beckel will now walk us through the change items as they relate to House File 4300.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representatives, my name is Solveig Beckel. I'm from House Fiscal Analysis, and I will present the spreadsheet showing the governor's recommended changes that align with House File 4300. So now, please allow me some time to share my screen. Okay. So this spreadsheet is a change item only spreadsheet. It is available in member packets as well as the committee website and the House Fiscal webpage. There are extended spreadsheets available on the committee page as well. So if you want to look at the February forecast, for example, you can do that there. I'm using a truncated version today just because the numbers seem to get really small. So starting on lines 2 and 3, the governor recommends increasing the formula allowance 2%. So it increases that formula allowance from 6,863 to 7,000. Line 7, the governor's formula allowance increase results in an increase of roughly $131 million in fiscal year 23, as well as $291.6 million in the tails. And again, the tails are fiscal years 24 and 25. Line 8, the formula allowance interaction with public pre-K results in an increase of $3 million in fiscal year 23. And $7.248 million in the tails. Line 9, expanding access to online learning for Bureau of Indian Education schools has a cost of $3,000 per year. Line 10, expanding targeted services, extended time revenue increase has an impact of $900,000 in the first year of fiscal 23, and then an impact of $1 million per year thereafter. Line 11, the provision of special instruction increasing that age to age 22 has a cost of $3.661 million ongoing. Line 12, the public pre-K for eligible four-year-old children, which is also linked to the formula, as I mentioned here, will have a cost of $137.4 million in fiscal year 23, and then a total tails cost of $329.291 million. Line 13 shows the reduced funding disparities for children with disabilities aid. That comes in at $511,000 in fiscal year 23 and $1.3 million in the tails. Line 14, the English learner cross-subsidy reduction aid increase has a cost of $13.9 million in fiscal year 23. And the total cost of $31.7 million in the tails. And those are the general education base items. Moving on to other general education programs. Line 18, you can see the career and technical aid increase. This will have a fiscal impact of $548,000 in fiscal year 23 and $7.3 million in the tails. Line 19, the governor recommends reducing the English learner cross-subsidy reduction aid because of raising it elsewhere by $2 million in fiscal years 23, 24, and 25. Line 20, the non-public pupil education aid increase is $102,000 in fiscal year 23 and $136,000 in the tails. The non-public pupil transportation ed increase is $355,000 in fiscal year 23 and $882,000 in the tails. These changes result in a total general education change of $289 million, in fiscal year 23, as well as a change of $674.79 million in the tails. Moving down to education excellence, Line 27, public pre-K for eligible four-year-old children. This item you will see throughout the spreadsheet because MMB kindly broke it out for fiscal staff to show where those costs would actually end up. So public pre-K for education excellence is $2.277 million in the first year, and then $5.238 million in the tails. Line 28, the American Indian Education Aid increase. The governor recommends an increase of $3.12 million ongoing. Line 29, bold literacy would increase costs by $5 million for each year. Line 30, public pre-K for eligible four-year-old children. This is a separate item that is not visible on this spreadsheet, but should be visible on the other extended spreadsheets. I apologize for that. And that has funding of $2.443 million in fiscal year 23 and $5.684 million in the tails. Line 31 shows the culturally specific learning opportunities. This is $5 million per year. Line 32 shows the educator career pathways, also $5 million per year. Line 33 shows the cost for expanding competency-based education. These costs would be $6.648 million in fiscal year 23 and $3.352 million in the tails. Line 34, expanding rigorous coursework. This comes in at a cost of $10 million per year. Line 35, full service community schools funding, also $5 million per year. Line 36, intermediate district support. The governor recommends $1 million per year. Multi-tiered systems of support on line 37. The governor recommends $15 million per year. On line 38, the governor recommends tribal contract schools increase of $58,000 in fiscal year 23 and $135,000 in the tails. Moving down to the teachers section, line 42, the public pre-K for eligible four-year-old children, the QComp interaction is $1.4 million in fiscal year 23. And $3.782 million in the tails. Line 43 shows American Indian History and Culture relicensure requirements, costing $86,000 in fiscal year 23 and $120,000 in the tails. Line 44, aspiring teacher retention bonuses. This would have a cost of $3.75 million per year. Line 45, establishment of the visually impaired graduate program. This would have a cost of $700,000 per year. Line 46, the grow your own increase would have a cost of $21.725 million in fiscal year 23 and a total cost of $39.45 million in the tails. Line 47, the recruit and retain ed support professionals has a cost of $15 million per year. Line 48, reducing financial burden for aspiring teachers. The governor recommends funding that at $2.275 million per year. Line 49, the statewide teacher mentoring program. The governor recommends funding at $5.5 million per year. Line 50, the student support personnel. The governor recommends funding at $21.955 million in the first year and $54.934 million in the tails, for a teacher subtotal of 72.432 of change items in the fiscal year 23 and 152.736 million of change items in the tails. Moving down to special education, the governor recommends provision of special instruction for special education, increasing the age to 22. This is the part of that that is not tied to the formula increase. And the governor recommends an increase of $45,000 in the tails only. The public pre-K for eligible four-year-old children interaction with special education is on line 55, and the governor recommends $4.235 million in fiscal year 23 and $10.962 million in the TAILS. Line 56, separate sites and programs. This is for setting four and higher, and this is additional funding. The governor recommends $5.071 million in fiscal year 23 and $11.316 million in the TAILS. Line 57, the special education cross-subsidy reduction aid increase. The governor recommends $45.659 million in fiscal year 23 and a total of $110.53 million in the TAILS. Line 58, special education life skills and vocational skills secondary transition programs. The governor recommends $1 million ongoing for totals in special education of $55.965 million for change items in fiscal year 23 and $134.853 million of change in the TAILS. In the facilities area, the governor recommends just one change. The long-term facilities management, or LTFM, public pre-K interaction. And this is $2.335 million in fiscal year 23 and $5.289 million in the TAILS. For health and safety, on line 66, the Intermediate School District's Mental Health Innovative Grant Program, the governor recommends one-time funding of $4.9 million in fiscal year 23. Line 67, school-based mental health screening, the governor recommends funding of $9.983 million per year. Line 68, school-linked behavioral health grants, which will be a transfer to DHS, comes in at $6 million per year. In the nutrition area, the governor has two recommendation items for pre-K on line 72 and 74. Line 72 is school breakfast, which would be an increase of 967 in fiscal year 23, and an increase of $2.056 million in the TAILS. Line 73, school breakfast reducing disparities for young children with disabilities. This would have a cost of $172,000 per year. Line 74, the school lunch for the public pre-K program would have a cost of $414,000 in fiscal year 23 and $880,000 in the TAILS. Then the governor's proposal of universal free meals on line 75 would have a cost of $187 million roughly in fiscal year 23 and $396.5 million in the TAILS. The libraries did not have any change from the governor. So the subtotal for K through 12 education aids for change items is roughly $690 million in fiscal year 23 and $1.5 million in the TAILS, $1.5 billion in the TAILS. Moving on to community education and lifelong learning. On line 87, the after-school grant programs are funded at $5 million per year. And the out-of-school time slash community partnership on line 88 is funded at $7 million per year. Under lifelong learning, the governor recommends fully paying for high school equivalency tests. So line 92 shows that that would have an impact of $345,000 per year. Then we have the subtotal for K through 12 and community education. So roughly $700 million in fiscal year 23 and a bit over $1.5 billion in fiscal years 24 and 25. For the state agency funding, the governor recommends on line 102 funding for the new public pre-K provision of $3.476 million in fiscal year 23 and $6.818 million in the TAILS for the department. Line 103, I showed legalizing adult use cannabis in brackets because this is tracked separately from the education budget at this time. Line 104, the criteria change and multi-tiered systems of support. The cost would be $540,000 in fiscal year 23 and $1.08 million in the TAILS. On line 108, for Pelsby, the educator's online licensing system would have a cost of $660,000 in fiscal year 23 and $728,000 in the TAILS. The Minnesota Academies and the Purpich Center, the governor recommends no changes. And then the governor does recommend one change on line 122 to the Special Revenue Fund. And this online learning application fee spending authority would have impacts of $21,000 in fiscal year 22, $5,000 in fiscal year 23, and then $3,000 in fiscal years 24 and 25. Madam Chair, that completes my presentation.
Ms. Beckel, thank you for that very thorough overview. When this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instruction on how to sign up to testify. Right now, we have, if there are members of the public that would like to testify, maybe I'm off here, I apologize. I think we're going to hear from some testifiers before we take our public testimony. First on deck, we have Ms. Snyder, followed by Ms. Harper. You will have 2 minutes for your testimony. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Caitlin Snyder with Education Minnesota. We would really like to thank the governor for putting forward a budget that really puts our students first. In the interest of time, we're going to focus on the items in the bill that we support that really expand services for the students that need the support the most. We're really happy to see the inclusion of keeping kids in special ed to age 22. Representative Berg has a similar provision that would include general ed kids. That's worthy of consideration as well. We are strong supporters of the increased services and access to public pre-K programs to kids from low-income families and other families that need supports. We are incredibly happy to see the increased services to students that are English language learners. This is a growing population in our state, and they need direct supports in the classroom. We're very supportive of the wraparound services included in the full service community schools, the multi-tiered systems of supports to help support our students that need interventions. The increased services and access in intermediate. A lot of our highest needs kids, at least in the metro, are served at intermediate school districts, and their funding system isn't tied to the formula, so they need this investment. We are strong supporters of the Student Support Personnel Aid, the bill that was heard in committee yesterday, and so you know all about it. We're strong supporters of investments to diversify our teaching workforce, like the Grow Your Own programs, and the paid training for education support professionals to make sure that those working directly with our students with special needs have the training they need to meet their needs. Lastly, I'm incredibly happy to see the provision to provide universal meals to our students because we know that they can't learn if they're hungry. So thank you for your time, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Snyder. Up next is Ms. Harper, and on deck is Alicia Mobley. Excuse me. Ms. Harper, state your name for the record and proceed, please.
Good morning. I am Lori Harper. I'm the Director of Education for the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. I also serve on the Tribal Nations Education Committee. I would like to state real quickly that I'm in the process of modifying my comments due to the 2 minute limitation. So all of the modifications from Minnesota Department of Ed to American Indian Education are directed to assist American Indian students, their families and communities, to ensure American Indian students will reach their full potential within their school communities through meaningful, equitable, and targeted educational experiences that affirms and values their unique cultural identities. Minnesota Statutes 2020, Section 124.74, Subdivision 3 is amended with the change being to the extent that the unique educational and culturally related academic needs of American Indian people are met, and American Indian student accountability factors are the same or higher than their non-American Indian peers. We need to close the achievement gap, and it won't happen unless we specifically work towards increasing American Indian academic success. Minnesota Statutes 2020, Section 124D.81 Subdivision 2A has been amended, which references the American Indian Education Aid. It does increase the American Indian Education Aid, and it actually doubles this in order to provide adequate programming and human resources. I can't stress that this is a must enough. And we at Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, of course, support the 10.72% of the tribal set aside for early childhood, as well as the community after school programs that authorize the Commissioner of Education to award grants to community and nonprofit organizations. American Indian organizations, tribal nations, political subdivisions, libraries, or school-based programs operating during non-school hours. Most specifically, we were delighted to read the requirement that the grant applicants include an assessment of needs and resources, a description of the program's partnership between a school and another entity, and a description and explanation of a plan to provide services. I'll yield my time, so Miigwech Bizendowieg.
Thank you, Ms. Harper. On deck is Eva Pohl. Alicia Mobley is next. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Did you mean Alicia Garcia? Or
I have a name, Alicia Mobley. If I have
Madam Chair, I'm apologies.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Madam Chair, Eva Pohl and I will be commenting together. So I just wanted to make that note in the notes today.
Thank you. Please state your name and proceed.
Yes. My name is Dr. Alicia Mobley. I'm the Special Ed Director in Richfield Public Schools.
And I am Eva Pohl, Director of Special Education, serving Park Rapids, Walker, Hackensack, Akeley, Nevis, Pine Point, and the Up North Learning Center.
Welcome. Please continue.
All right. We represent the Minnesota Administrators of Special Education, known as MACE.
And together, we represent also over 50 years of experience in special education. So we want to thank you, Madam Chair, the chair, committee members, and Governor Walz for bringing forward the needs of our community, starting with the expansion of the Blind, Visually Impaired Program, teacher preparation program in Minnesota. And we're grateful for this, how it's going to increase the teaching force. And it also includes mentoring.
We're also very grateful for the $15 million projected and proposed for supporting our paraprofessionals who work with our students who have disabilities.
We recognize that the federal government has failed this promise to fully fund special education. We also know the burden that it costs local school districts. So we also are in strong support of the cross-subsidy reduction aid that will bring the levels back to close to 2019.
And we're also very thankful for the projection looking at those schools and cooperatives with separate facilities and separate sites where students of very significant disabilities are. And we know those programs are so costly to run, and we appreciate the projected funding for that area.
The rulemaking change committee to the SLG eligibility criteria, it seems appealing. However, we do want to make sure that we continue working together. We'd like to work with MDE as well on this to make sure that school districts are prepared and that also that our teachers are prepared as well.
And then the next piece that we're very thankful for is the special education vocational aid for transition. This is a area of great need for our children and as they're going into adulthood. But we would appreciate clarification when it comes to the language change for the eligibility to age 22. Both parents and school districts need to have clarification in that area because of the impact that that may have on our districts and our funding and our availability of space to provide that additional service, that may prove burdensome for many of our districts across the state of Minnesota. So we do appreciate consideration of clarification and the impact of that for our students.
And we'll end with the strong support also for EL revenue. As you know, there are scholars who receive special education services who also receive EL services. And so this is a benefit to all of us. And Madam Chair, I don't believe I stated where I was from, and I'd like an opportunity to do that before we close. I'm the current special education director for Richfield Public Schools.
Thank you both so much for your testimony. My apologies for not having Ms. Dietrich on deck. But Ms. Dietrich, you are up with Valerie Bow on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Denise Dietrich, and I am with the Minnesota School Boards Association, representing all 333 school boards across the state. This morning, I am testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, Minnesota Rural Education Association, Schools for Equity in Education, Minnesota Elementary and Secondary School Principals, and the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. We want to thank you for the opportunity to share our broad support for House File 4300 as it moves us toward our shared goal of achieving fiscal stability for our public schools. Governor Walz's investment of $789 million in public education is bold and greatly appreciated. In his bill, there are a number of needed provisions to help students and schools recover from the pandemic-related education disruptions of the past 2 years. Specifically to the bill, we appreciate the additional 2% on the general education formula, the expansion of public pre-K, increasing the CTE reimbursement, reducing the special education and English learner cross subsidies, linking funding streams to the formula increases, expanding Grow Your Own programs, and prioritizing mental health and well-being for our students and staff. Also, we greatly appreciate the new section of the bill that moves towards competency-based education. Earlier in session, we asked the governor and House and Senate leadership to make stabilizing Minnesota's education funding system their highest priority. As we continue these budget discussions, we renew our request to fully fund the special education and English learner cross subsidies. These two investments would move the needle significantly towards stabilizing funding that would benefit every school district in the state and all 850,000 students. Thank you for your time today, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. Up next is Valerie Bow. On deck is Ms. Wallstein. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
I am Valerie Bow, Superintendent of Intermediate District 916. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I am very grateful for the opportunity to share the highly specialized work of the intermediates. 916 serves 13 members in the Northeast Metro. The four intermediates combined provide educational services for over 20,000 students across the metro. The students in our Setting 4 special education programs are the top 1% of students with the greatest need. These students have significant trauma and disabilities that require highly trained staff and special learning environments. The intensity of our students' behaviors prevent them from accessing day treatment or residential treatment facilities, and our programs are their family's last hope for education and mental health services. Intermediates provide safe environments with intensive mental health services and specially trained educators with the expertise to support the intensity of the behaviors while providing education. As an intermediate, we have a great responsibility to our member districts. And when we are able to meet the needs of students, they have a greater chance of returning to their home schools to learn alongside their friends and peers. Even though our staff find their jobs intensely challenging, they love the children and find the work rewarding and meaningful. When students transition back to their home school, it is a great sense of accomplishment and pride. I want to share a recent story of a kindergartner who lost her mother at the start of the school year. The trauma of the loss required our services, and with our specialized support, she is now attending school with her brother in their neighborhood school. Every one of our students has a story that's filled with unimaginable life challenges. On behalf of the intermediate students and families, we are very grateful to be included in the governor's budget. With the appropriate funding, our most educationally vulnerable children can grow into productive citizens who will contribute in positive ways to their communities. I thank you again for considering the intermediate students and their families.
Thank you, Ms. Bo. Up next is Amy Wallstein, and on deck is Josh Crossan. Please state your name for the record and begin with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 4300 today. My name is Amy Wallstein. I'm the Education Policy Workforce Development Director for the Minnesota Business Partnership. Our members are the 115 CEOs and senior leaders from Minnesota's largest employers, and we are focused on ensuring Minnesota students are well prepared for careers in the global economy. There are a few things in this bill that we strongly support. We are excited about the bold literacy proposal. Reading is an education and an economic issue, and early literacy proficiency opens up doors for students both in academics and in life. Disparities in reading proficiency here in Minnesota are startling, but it is becoming clear that a statewide commitment to evidence-based reading instruction, like what the Bold Literacy Plan sets up, that commitment to students can greatly accelerate reading proficiency. Second, we appreciate the inclusion in this bill of additional funding for the Early Learning Scholarship Program. Scholarships have proven to be our best tool for helping children access quality kindergarten readiness programs because scholarships are targeted to the most disadvantaged students. They're flexible and portable to fit the unique needs of families, and they're centered on quality. Investing in early learning scholarships for low-income Minnesota children who can't afford quality early childcare and education programs not only helps families least able to afford childcare, but also creates new consumer demand to incentivize childcare businesses to stay open and expand. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wallstein. Up next is Josh Crossan, and on deck is Scott Kroonquist. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Josh Crossan, and I'm Executive Director at Ed Allies, an education advocacy group dedicated to ensuring all kids have access to an excellent education. I'm here today to express gratitude for the governor's education funding bill, specifically highlighting the governor's urgency around literacy, universal access to lunch, early learning scholarships, and access to college and standards-aligned coursework. On literacy, in a state where only 2 in 3 kids are reading at grade level and the rate is cut in half for kids of color, worse even after the pandemic, we must shift to evidence-based practices to improving our literacy. Section 3 of the bill improves policy by expanding early foundations of literacy to kindergarten and bases reading curriculum on the science of reading, a proven strategy to get kids on track. We also appreciate how this bill centralizes dyslexia tools and screening with the Department of Education. We support literacy incentive aid using science of reading again strategies and centralizing those programs at the Department of Education. We also support the $5 million investment in the Bold Literacy Program. One thing to note, while we appreciate the $1.75 million investment in letters, it's a great program that works and we should be investing in that program. I would also encourage you also to consider looking into the science of reading programs that are local and equally as effective as letters. I'm worried that we're putting all of our eggs into our literacy future in one basket with letters. So programs like Grove Learning, for example, has science-based reading programs and trains public school teachers in Minnesota as well. So thinking about diversifying that literacy aid. Second, rigorous coursework. Ed Allies has been a strong supporter of expanding rigorous coursework, especially for our low-income learners, kids of color, kids with disabilities. And the governor includes a $10 million appropriation to that program, which we support. I would just like to note the final two items that seem to be missing in the governor's bill, which probably are larger conversations. One was mentioned earlier, the costs of special education and English learner services are far outpacing the formulas we use to fund them. The cross-subsidy aid is an important and needed provision in the bill, but we seem to be putting Band-Aid on top of Band-Aid in addressing the cross-subsidy, and I would love to see that $9 billion being used to permanently fix the cross-subsidy to fully fund special education and English language services. And then the last thing I would note is our surplus is partly due to undercounting low-income families Did we have fewer low-income families due to COVID? Likely no. Schools are forced to receive free and reduced price lunch forms, and if families don't submit those forms, schools are lose funding. So personally, I'm on the school board of Northeast College Prep Charter School, and it was reported that about $250,000 was lost due to unsubmitted forms. So finding a long-term permanent solution to addressing and adequately identifying low-income families is an equitable solution that should be addressed as well. So with that, I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crossan. Up next is Mr. Kronquist, and on deck is Leah Gardner. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Scott Kronquist, and I am the Executive Director of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. AMSD's 50 districts collectively enroll more than one half of the state's public school students. Thank you for the opportunity to share some comments in support of House File 4300, the governor's supplemental budget bill. The last 2 years have brought tremendous challenges for our students and our schools. The federal government has provided significant resources to address these challenges. As important as that federal support has been, it is important to keep in mind that the federal funds are one-time appropriations. Using one-time funds for ongoing programs could create fiscal cliffs for our school districts. To illustrate that point, we recently completed a survey of our member districts to ascertain their budget situation for next school year. The survey results show that the difference between projected ongoing revenues and ongoing expenditures, excluding those one-time federal funds, results in a combined shortfall of more than $230 million for our member school districts next year. House File 4300 would help address these shortfalls and bring greater stability to the funding system. A few of the provisions that I would especially like to highlight include the 2% formula increase, which would mitigate the funding shortfalls I just mentioned. The increases in the special education and English learner programs would begin to address the large cross-subsidies in those important programs. Linking funding streams like local optional revenue, extended time revenue, and English learner revenue to the formula would increase stability and transparency. It would mean that when the legislature approves a 2% formula increase, that school districts would actually receive something closer to 2% in revenue. Finally, the proposed additional resources to help our school districts and intermediate districts address the mental health needs of our students are critical. The historic state budget surplus provides the opportunity to bring greater stability to the funding system and help our students and schools recover from the pandemic. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Up next is Leah Gardner. On deck is Joseph Held. Please identify yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Leah Gardner. I am with Hunger Solutions Minnesota, and also representing the Hunger Free Schools Coalition, which is a diverse and growing group of nonprofits, businesses, healthcare leaders, youth, and family advocates across the state. I'm testifying to offer our full support for investing in school meals for all. We've seen firsthand the benefit of schools being able to offer no-cost meals thanks to the temporary federal relief. We've seen participation in breakfast and lunch go up. Families haven't had to worry about the rigid low-income requirements to access free meals, or if it makes more sense and is more cost-effective to pack school meals. Students have been able to access stigma-free meals that are able to help them fuel their learning. And schools have been able to focus on providing nutrition as opposed to collecting meal payments. As federal support expires at the end of this school year, the need is urgent for Minnesota to step up and keep us moving forward. I honestly couldn't pick just one story to share with you today about the reality of youth in our schools that have been skipping meals and going hungry as a result of their families not being able to afford these meals before the pandemic. Unfortunately, we know that families will continue to face economic strain in the next school year and beyond. Even before the pandemic, 1 in 4 food insecure students were not eligible for free and reduced price meals. School Meals for All is a common sense way forward. by leveraging existing federal resources like the community eligibility provision offered in this proposal, we can afford this in Minnesota. And in fact, I would say considering the very real alternative of increasing childhood hunger, I would say we actually can afford that too. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Up next is Mr. Held, and on deck is Josh Donham. Please identify yourself for the committee for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hello, everybody. Happy St. Patrick's Day. My name is Joe Held. I'm the Dean of Students at White Bear Lake High School and the BAR coordinator. Previous to that, I was a socialized teacher at the high school as well as at Centennial High School in Circle Pines. And honestly, it's a privilege and honor to be here to testify on behalf of funding for the Building Assets Reducing Risks, also known as the BAR model, as it can be found on House File 4300 on line 4518. We have BAR in five schools in White Bear Lake, two elementary, both of our middle schools and our high school. And it's not an overstatement to say that BAR has transformed what we do in education. The slogan for BAR is same students, same teachers, better results. And we have found that to be true. So to share a quick story with you, we had about a month ago, we had a student that joined White Bear Lake, open enrolled from another district, and we didn't have a lot of documentation on them. And part of the BAR model with its training and with its coaching is that our ninth grade is broken up into teams, and our teachers in their training meet weekly to collaborate about students. So this isn't about content or curriculum. This is about collaborating about students and their needs. Well, the language arts teacher in this meeting said that they noticed that this new student was not completing some assignments. So she mentioned it, and the science teacher piped up and said, you know, I just got off the phone with the mom a couple days ago, and she said that he struggled with reading science textbooks in his previous school. Well, one thing led to another, and we were able to quickly have our reading interventionist do an assessment, and we learned that there were some pretty significant literacy gaps with this student. We were able to appropriately put them in the correct class. I'm really happy to say that that student now has all A's and B's. And what you'll notice happened here with the BAR model is we were able to be proactive. We didn't have to wait for the student to struggle enough to be able to get some support. We were able to get support right away. Additionally, thinking about that parent was able to convey to six teachers all at once through one person instead of having to contact six people or wait for them to come to her. So it's a really big deal. It's transformed how we communicate. Teachers collaborate about the strengths as well as support. So it really is an honor to be able to endorse them. I wish every school I was ever a part of had it. Our passing rates have increased. Our discipline rates have gone down. Out of the 700 ninth graders that we have, we talk about every single one of them weekly in this model, and it's education at its finest. So I strongly encourage you to fund it, and I really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Chair Sensted, you're muted.
I am. My apologies. Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Josh Downham. On deck is Alicia Garcia. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Josh Downham with the Minneapolis Public Schools. I want to thank Chair Davini for authoring the bill, and thank Commissioner Mueller and Governor Walz for bringing forward a very strong education finance bill. Given the brief time to provide comments, I'll say ditto to my colleague, Mr. Kroonquist's comments, and use my time to focus on a few key provisions in the bill and highlight where we would recommend the committee consider making more significant investments. Minneapolis Public Schools support the provisions in the bill to address student mental health. The proposals to expand the number of school support personnel and school-linked mental health services will help students all across Minnesota. Building on last year's omnibus education bill, we support the expansion of Grow Your Own grants and funding for the recruitment and retention of education support professionals. In Minneapolis, 50% of our education support professionals are people of color and American Indians. Building pathways for our ESPs to become teachers is a focus of our district. Since the passage of last year's omnibus bill, we've received information from the state that the gap between special education aides and costs has actually grown. Despite the efforts of this committee heading into conference committee last year, the result of the 2021 legislature was to actually grow the special education cross-subsidy by $60 million. Similarly, the gap between English learner aides and costs grew from $118 million to $146 million. The total underfunding of these two programs now is more than $900 million annually. We recommend the committee address these pressing issues. And lastly, I want to address the loss of compensatory revenue. As Minneapolis is putting together our budget for the next school year, we are facing a decrease of $9 million in compensatory revenue year over year. MPS supports universal school meals, but would urge the committee to ensure that it does not negatively impact the district's ability to address the needs of students in our highest poverty schools. Thanks, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much for that information. Up next is Alicia Garcia, and on deck is Daniel Newitz. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Alicia Garcia. I am testifying today on behalf of the Minnesota School Social Work Association. I am a Taos Pueblo descendant and a licensed clinical social worker with 20 years experience working for Indian Education. The recommendations outlined in House File 4300 provide critical funding provisions that can begin to narrow the existing opportunity gaps for Black, Indigenous, Latinx students, and other marginalized groups. The pandemic has cast light on the inequities associated with lack of access to vital care, mental health, and academic resources and support. House File 4300 also prioritizes funding for American Indian education support. According to MDE, American Indians in Minnesota have a graduation rate of 50%, which is the lowest of all ethnic groups. My role is to be the bridge between families, communities, and the school. In too many of our schools, our students become invisible, lose interest, and drop out. I have been most successful at re-engaging American Indian students at schools that offer Native courses and additional support staff, like Harding High School and St. Paul. At Harding, I have been working with a student who has attendance issues. After touring charter schools, he decided to increase his effort at Harding because he didn't like the feeling of being the only Native and not seeing himself represented in the curriculum.
Ms. Garcia, I apologize. Oh. We're getting some additional noise. Members, please just check your microphones that they are muted. I apologize. Please continue with your testimony.
All right. Harding also provides an educational assistant who works solely with American Indian students. Recently, the EA and I have joined forces for a ninth grader who is in school every day but not in class. While I communicate frequently with the parent, the EA is able to check in daily with the student. I refuse to allow this student or any Native student to become invisible. These successes can be duplicated across the state, but without increased funding, Indian education services and staff are stretched out too thinly to make a significant impact. Minnesota students deserve fundamental resources and support to thrive in our educational communities. We urge you to support the following provisions in House File 4300, the American Indian Education Support, Student Support Personnel Aid, Mental Health Screening, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Up next, and I think our last testifier on deck is Daniel Newitz. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you, Madam Chair and the members of the Education Finance Committee for this opportunity to testify in support of House File 4300. My name is Daniel Kanewitz. I'm a licensed school psychologist here in Minnesota. I'm the chair of the Legislative Committee for the Minnesota School Psychologists Association. House File 4300 includes many policy items that would have a meaningful, positive impact on student outcomes. I'd like to draw the committee's attention to one particular item this morning, that is the change to special education criteria under the category of specific learning disability, which we often refer to as SLD. SLD is the most frequent category of special education eligibility in our state. In 2019, almost 34,000 students in Minnesota were eligible for services with a primary disability of SLD. So when we talk about the flawed methods we currently use to identify learning disabilities, we're talking about an issue that is having a direct impact on thousands of students and their families. Like so many of the issues that face our schools, the harm that results from this outdated practice is disproportionately felt by our students and families of color. Due to the way that our current state rules are written, Minnesota schools are overwhelmingly using the IQ achievement discrepancy model to identify students with learning disabilities. In fact, in a recent survey, 98% of school psychologists across the state reported that they use the outdated discrepancy model. This current widespread practice is extremely concerning given that for decades, research has revealed this model as an inaccurate way-to-fail method that contributes to misidentification of students' disabilities, whether they are struggling due to dyslexia, difficulties in math, or other academic deficits. Our use of this method contributes to inappropriate labels that may result in harmful segregation from the general education setting. For more than 20 years, research in the field points toward a more effective method in identifying students with SLD, which is a process grounded in an MTSS framework. In fact, an increasing number of states have eliminated the outdated discrepancy model in favor of current best practices around MTSS. As a school psychologist and a concerned citizen, my hope is that lawmakers in Minnesota will embrace this nonpartisan opportunity to improve the lives of Minnesota students by phasing out policy that contributes to misidentification and disproportionality in special education. I appreciate your consideration of this meaningful legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Members, as we wrap up this portion of the hearing, I just would like to remind you to check your packets and review the handful of letters that we have received. Again, those are in your virtual packets. We do have a few minutes remaining. We have time for a few questions. We need to keep these brief and as succinct as possible. Are there any member questions? I dare say this is near impossible. Representative Crenshaw, any final word?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just add that I know this is the governor's bill, and out of respect, we carry the governor's bill. It is highly unlikely that we'll see this bill come forward. I don't believe there's a Senate companion. So we're doing due diligence to the governor, but what I believe, and it's not necessarily a serious proposal either, I think that we'll see substantial changes that come to the committee. So we'll withhold our comments until we have the proposal back in front of us.
Thank you, Representative Crenshaw. Representative Davney, any closing remarks?
Madam Chair, thank you. Members, thank you. I want to start by thanking the testifiers, the public members who came in support of the bill, who saw the strengths in the governor's plan, whether it's literacy, the emphasis on multi-tiered systems of support, the support for more school support personnel, because we are recognizing across the state and across the nation the need for more mental health support for students and for school staff at this point. We are awaiting the Senate companion. I know it's been dropped. We're waiting on the introductions in the Senate file number to come. It's a strong proposal from the governor. I'm glad we had the time today. And Madam Chair, I thank you for chairing.
Thank you, Representative
Ebney. One update, Senate file 4113 is the Senate file number for the companion bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davney. Members, I just want to say thank you, and to our testifiers too. Thank you for being so mindful of the time restrictions. And with that, Representative Davney renews his motion to lay House File 4300 over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. Again, thank you very much. And with that, members, this meeting is adjourned.